Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Adam Barrett. And welcome, everybody, for joining this episode. This episode, we were going to talk about something else, but then we started to talk about a blog post I just did, and I realized I got so excited and started rambling on that we said, wait a minute, we should just hit record.
I think the record's going. I think we're okay. Good.
Coffee cup's full.
Yep.
Record's
all
hit.
Set. Yep.
And Adam's already wound up about something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just took a look at your article. You posted it a couple of days ago before we're sitting down to record. And by the time this episode comes out, it'll be a couple months back. So hopefully you've already seen it, right? Others have seen it. But this is going to be a little bit behind the scenes, I guess. Of what in the world were you thinking writing this, attacking Mercedes? I think the title of it is What is Mercedes Doing? Which is other than making cars.
Yeah. And here's the funny thing is after I'm done ranting about this, and I can't decide which side I'm on. Either Mercedes is genius or they've lost their minds. And it's one or the other. And I'm just not smart enough to figure it out. But the answer would be, if you want quarterly profits, they're genius. If they want long-term customer loyalty to maintain what they've had for the past 90 years, they're blowing it. So,
all right. Well, that's a summary.
All right. Yeah. Well, there's your answer first. And here's what triggered it. And I couldn't believe it. On my relaxing days off, I like to look up reliability statistics and data on products. and I'm a car guy too, so you can imagine where this is headed.
Yeah, yeah.
I looked up, so the Mercedes CLA 250 is a new model they've done. And
we have to make it clear that we get no kickback or royalties for talking about this car the whole time.
No, I think what you mean to say is that we're not going to get sued, we hope, because this is in no way an endorsement.
Okay. It's a review. It's a review.
It's a review. The CLA 250 has 140% less reliability than the average rated car.
Well, how can you do more than 100%? Is it like and goes into negative territory?
No, it can't go in the negative. That means it just catches fire at the dealership, I guess.
Well, if I have a 10-year expected life of a vehicle and I reduce it by 100%, that means it's got no lifetime, right?
Right.
So if 140% less is what explain this percentage. What's the percentage of because I can't do more than take away all the reliability.
I'm going to fall down there. I have to go look into exactly how they calculated. I just saw such a bad number that I just kind of didn't.
Well, you know, we don't want to be dealing with this fake news stuff here. So
That's true. No, this was reputable. This is, I believe it was Consumer Reports.
Which is a subject for another podcast.
Right.
Well, so let's say it's a lot less.
It's a lot less than the average car. So Mercedes is supposed to be the best of the best, right? So the average
car. It's the best of the best on being expensive to buy that logo to have it on your car.
That's what it's become.
And it's engineered very well. It's a high performance car. I've never known it as the most durable or reliable car. They're solid, right? They're performance cars and luxury cars. But Lexus has got the reliability bit.
Right. Well, that's the thing is Mercedes used to. But here's the thing. So this car has sold fantastically. So the business model, and I think this is an extension of Mercedes' trend, you know, they used to be the reliable, it's the best of the best all the way across. Mm-hmm. But then they kind of, I think, changed clearly after the 1980s, going to the 90s and 2000s. We're going to be the highest tech. And most of our customers only have our cars for 3 years and then trade them in because they want a new model. So stuff as much technology in there as you can. Barely tested, barely matured. But you can advertise you have the latest and don't worry about the crappy reliability. And with this, they've actually now blended into, this is actually the CLA 250 is a really great looking car and good performance, but it's actually their kind of an entry level. It's pretty cheap. Hmm. I mean, there's some Hyundais that cost more than this car, so by a significant amount. So, you know, I think that's the success, is that they jammed a lot of technology in there that really they didn't do big development programs on, kind of stuff they're working out, kept the cost point low, and you know, their basic performance was there, and I'm sure they based it on a previous platform and had great success. But what's that doing to your long-term reputation? It's just, I don't know, it's kind of, it's frustrating to watch them do that, because I don't know how to picture how this story ends for them.
Well, you're talking about that 3 to 5 years from now that they won't be able to give away these cars on resale.
Yeah, but that's not their problem.
Right. Yeah, well, no, you're saying it is their problem, because I'm not going to buy a new car if I can't recoup something in a resale of it later. You know, if I'm not planning on keeping it for 10 years or 20 years, then resale is a part of the transaction. And you're saying if Consumer Reports and others say, you know, this is a dog of a car, you're going to be paying for repairs and replacements and updates and upkeeps, and then when you sell it, nobody's going to want it, so he's going to have to give it away.
Right. Yeah. I would have thought that would have killed them. I mean, the depreciation on a lot of, on these Mercedes is staggering, and it doesn't seem to hurt sales yet. So I don't know. I agree with what you're saying, and that's kind of part of what I'm getting at, but.
Well, you need to watch Sex and the City, the old TV show, because they would buy shoes, wear them twice, and then, you know, the appreciation value didn't count. It's buying brand. It's not buying an investment.
Right. So these are lease. I mean, what percentage of their sales are lease or people who just don't care about depreciation? I mean, I have a friend of mine who's a financial investor, and his addiction instead of drugs is cars, and he just walks into dealerships on the way home and he'll buy a Maserati, like it's ridiculous. But the thing is though, what he pays in excise tax each year is more than the mortgage on his huge house, because he just is constantly changing over cars, so he doesn't even care. So I guess, I don't know, we just listed 5 different customer types, but the irony, do you want to hear the historical irony of this? Right. Is I have a Mercedes SL550, which is their small sports car that they just like stuffed an insanely big motor in, and it's a couple years old. It was not my purchase, let's say, in the family, somebody else who doesn't read my blogs or listen to these podcasts, so it's okay. I can totally ditch on it, but that thing is exactly what we're describing. It is amazing as far as, you know, I love cars top to bottom. And this thing, the amount of power it has in this little, you know, convertible, and it has an amazing ability to handle like a sports car, practically a race car, but it rides comfortably too, mm-hmm. at the same time. I mean, mm-hmm. there's more. And here's the thing. There's so many computers in this. It has a separate electrical system for the computers with a separate car battery.
Oh, wow.
Like a separate, like 12-volt, 70-amp battery just to handle the computer system, because of the the regular electrical system can't keep up with it. So, yeah, I'm not kidding. And guess what? This battery, if it gets overly drained, the car starts acting all quirky. I can't tell you how my wife and I both, how many times we curse this car because it just starts doing weird stuff. Because of
weird,
simple
weird like things. Turning left all of a sudden, or the windows opening. What do you mean by weird stuff?
Weird like it'll tell you that it's having a voltage issue with like the, you know, what they call the convenience electronics. Mm-hmm. And then if I hit the brakes really hard, and the braking computer system's amazing if you look up this thing, but if I hit the brakes really hard, the headlights will flicker off for a second, and the lights on the dash will change the messages. So that's messed up. But the thing is that I know that's a known issue with this car, because the braking system is really unreal. And the computer controls in it and everything. And it can like brake differentially in every corner, and it does it based on this sensor, and it has G sensor. It just like, you know, it's way overdone. But if any part of it's not working quite right, it really, you know, it confuses everything. So when it's working great, it's unreal. And that's not frequently.
Was Mercedes turning into, I remember 20, 30 years ago, Jaguar was not a good investment. It was a wonderful luxury brand for the high-end Jaguars. yet it was in the shop more often than on the road is what I heard from people. Are you saying that's where they're heading with these Mercedes?
I think this is strategic. And here's the thing, which, I mean, Jaguar was so bad. There was a company called Jaguars That Run that would put a Chevy 350 in your Jaguar for you, pull out their V12, because it just was that, you know, frustrating. People wanted the elegance, but couldn't take it not running.
Right.
That was just sloppy engineering, basically. If you looked at their practices and, you know, it was Lucas that did their wiring systems. And just, if you look, I mean, just, it was just old school sloppy engineering, you know, all passion and nothing tech, you know. So that's was
well. Well, the Mercedes guys, though, they're pretty solid engineers. That's at least their reputation.
No, they're amazing. Yeah, I think it's business decisions, because Mercedes was the opposite. They always were the, like, if you want to drive this thing for 25 years without a hiccup, buy a Mercedes. Mm-hmm. You know, it was actually a better return on an investment than another car that would last 10 years, because even though it costs more, you could drive it forever.
Right, right.
And no, yeah. So I think it's just these. I think it's just the business people have control, which is, it's a business, and clearly they know what they're doing. Because if you're looking for, you know, profit, you know, margin and good quarterly reports, the CLA 250 is killing it.
Right.
So.
Well, what about Tesla, who's not making money? Apparently, they're not really a business. Have you seen any of the Model 3s yet? Are they out?
They're out, and I've seen reviews and, you know, even individual customers doing reviews on them. But I haven't seen one personally around.
All right. So what's their strategy, though? You know, it's the, I thought the original, I saw an article on it a couple weeks ago, and it was, the first model would be a small limited production and expensive, and it'll give us enough profit to build the next one and so on. And that's not happened yet. But the Model 3 was supposed to be, I'm thinking, like this Mercedes, the CLA 250, a smaller car with lots of cool features in it as an entry-level pricing to get people into electric cars. Yet, I don't know about the reliability aspect of it. I just wish they would get their production sorted and get them out there.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I don't know if that's just kind of the, you know, your own success kind of causing you an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, never in the history of cars have you had people wait outside of the dealership to purchase a reservation to buy a car in a year or two. Like, that happens at Apple stores.
Right.
That doesn't happen at car dealerships. And that's what happened to Model 3. People were waiting, camping outside to reserve the car, to have the right to reserve it. I mean, so with that kind of demand, I don't know how you could keep up with it, especially as a new car company. This isn't GM with a model where they can say, oh my God, demand's high, let's switch over some other product line to help accommodate, you know, expanding this one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, these guys are building their factory as they're designing the part.
Yeah.
And they're still working on it, from my understanding. And that's close. Yeah. And it's in the Bay Area. It's in Milpitas. It's not that far from where I live. And it's been a car factory for years and years and years, yet they've pretty much gutted the place and are rebuilding it. And one of my neighbors is working on just the parts delivery to the line. It's a big automated system. It's huge.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're still inventing as they go, yet there's not a lot of automotive engineers in the Bay Area. That's not what we do.
Mm.
So it's going to be curious.
But here's the thing. Is it a car?
No, it's just a computer on wheels.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, right? Like, so basically the car part then is stuff like, you know, sheet metal, stamping, part fitting, you know, these kinds of things that probably are so well established at this point, it's not hard to transfer that technology, right? I mean, sheet metal panel forming and all that. Actually, they probably don't even do that there. They probably have that shipped in from some expert, I would guess, right? Mm-hmm. Why would they get all the stamping stuff there?
You don't know about this.
You don't know. No, I know you don't know. But everything that's makes this car special and a game changer does come. That knowledge is from the Bay Area, pretty much, right? In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So
now it's going to be interesting how this story pans out. And, you know, by the time this episode comes out, we might have more info on it and more details on it. But we'll see. We have to remember to link back to the article so we And you had a couple of great images in this. I don't know where you find these things. You must be just driving down the road looking for spots. There's a guy hugging his car with a tree across the hood of it. The tree fell on his car. It looks like it actually, I don't know if it's just the wheel itself is bent out. It looks like that big.
No, the whole car is like pushed to the ground. It collapsed everything. So the suspension all broke and everything. So,
yeah. Another woman's hanging out of her sunroof of her car and while the rest of it's submerged in a creek or a river or something. She doesn't look upset at all. You know,
I think you could see the quotes I put on there, right?
Yeah.
I put on there that the tree, you know, did that as a mercy killing, basically to help the guy out, help him get rid of the car. And then the woman took the matters in her own hands. And
certainly don't have much of an opinion of the CLA 250.
If you buy it and it works, it's pretty cool. I mean, they definitely put some cool features together there, you know, and did a good job, but they just, if they just mature, I guess from that sense, it's heartbreaking. If they'd taken whatever it took to mature it with good design for reliability practices before release, I mean, this car could have been legendary, like a real milestone in bringing high tech to more entry level, you know, like high end Honda Accord prices.
If they spent another 2-3 years though, flushing all that out, it'd probably add 5 to 10K to the price though. So it pushes it up a bit. I think that might be the business decision. Let's just get it out. And if they're hooked on Mercedes, we're looking at their niche purchase, which will be a different model and one of the more upscale models. Yeah, it's hard to tell. Yeah. So here's a question I get every now and then, and I imagine our listeners get this also, is especially once you're known as a reliability engineer, is, well, what kind of car do you drive and why?
Mm. You know? So, right. Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Okay. My daily driver is a Honda, because Honda and Acura do a great blend. I mean, I basically, I've in a condescending way call my Honda Cross Tour it's my don't piss me off car is the only criteria I measured in. It's not a passion car. I have my passion cars. I have my 40-year-old Z. We have we have our SL. But the car I drive every day, my only thing with it is don't piss me off. Start every time I do it. If I have to carry stuff in the back, I want room, you know, do awesome in snow and all kinds of weather. Like I just don't want to ever think about you. I want you to be an appliance. And I love it because it's a perfect blend between everything I want. It gets good gas mileage. It has like 300 horsepower and a stupid station wagon, all wheel drive, you know, whatever. So it does exactly what I want. So I've separated out my passion cars from that. And then the passion cars, I can compromise, you know, other factors. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, but it's kind of fun. You see, I even threw a picture of, I compared it to Porsche, because they make their, you know, they make their cars, you know, in the same area Mercedes does, and they've always stuck with high reliability, and it's unbelievable still how highly reliable every Porsche model is. They just are so passionate about never compromising that. So
yeah, and those cars, I think Porsche has got a different model though. They're making collector's items. You know, every one of their models is somewhere in a museum. Even the new ones.
Not anymore, though. They have two SUVs. You know, they make, you know, like they've definitely
expanded
very wide. Yeah, they very wisely.
Did they merge with somebody, some American company?
Volkswagen.
Okay.
Yeah. Volkswagen.
So, you know, to answer the question myself is, I've had a Chevy at one point, and there was only one computer chip in the whole damn thing, and it was for the fuel injection. And I think it was replaced 4 times in the 2 years I owned it.
That one chip?
Yeah. And I'm like, come on. And, you know, the third time I took it to the garage, he goes, you need another chip? Yeah, I ordered an extra one last time. I knew you'd be back.
Oh, my God. Like,
and so we got rid of that. And then we had a Honda. And this was when my family was young, and we bought a minivan, moved into that stage of my life. And it was okay. It ran well. And we were on a trip. We had it for a number of years, and we were on a trip down to my in-laws. And we said, well, let's go look at a car. We had nothing else to do that afternoon. So we looked at a Toyota Sienna, another minivan. It was so quiet. It was so quiet, and it ran really, we knew it was quiet because we could hear the kids were actually in the car. whereas the Honda was so noisy and rattly and stuff. It wasn't, and I don't know what we got there. Oh, no, we had a Cherokee, Jeep Cherokee, and then we got the Sienna, and we had the Honda minivan for a little bit. But once I had that Sienna, the Toyota brand, never looked back. I've had nothing but Toyotas after that. They, like you said, don't piss me off kind of thing. They ride well, they're comfortable. The last car I bought, though, I guess I'm breaking my mold a little bit. The last car I bought was not because I needed a new car. My old Highlander was running just fine. It did everything else. But it didn't have Bluetooth for my phone, and I needed a better, I wanted to upgrade the radio and the stereo and the nav system.
Yeah.
So I bought a new car around it.
That's so funny. That's really funny.
But it was a big part of my decision was I want a car that will start and will run and I don't have to worry about and just deal.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I have 99 problems. I don't want my car to be one of them.
That's right.
Don't even, I mean, that's really it. As soon as it bothers me, I'm like, you're done. You know, like I don't even want to think of it.
All right. So I guess the CLA 250 is not on your purchase list anytime soon, I guess.
No, it's definitely not.
Okay. Well,
not with negative reliability, as you pointed out.
Yeah. You're going to have to come back and sort out what that, you know, 140% less. Now, depending on what they're measuring.
Oh, here we go.
Right. You find it?
Actually, do you know what? I was smart enough that I put the link to the original Consumer Reports on it. So if you click on the 140%, it goes to the original Consumer Reports. So you can actually then from there link to the data, I think. So you can link to the actual survey. All right. Well, there we go. I didn't off the top of my head know my research, but I did link to it. So
But
if you go to the article,
I'm looking at it right now. No, I'm not seeing an explanation for it.
Let's see.
You have to buy a magazine.
There. Yeah. anyway.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Well,
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. No, you can be, I mean, anyway, I won't get into the numbers. You can figure that out later, but suffice it to say that Consumers Reports is saying, hey, what the deal here? It's a lot worse than the average car. And the average car wasn't all that good. So,
yeah.
All right. I wonder if they mean, well, anyway, I won't dive into it. We'll dig into it another time. I'm going to go back to that question, though, is, you know, so if any of our listeners are, if you're working for Mercedes, sorry about that, but what's the deal there? And, you know, how do you buy a car for our listeners? You know, is reliability a big part of that? Or is it, you know, utility or some other feature or set? And have you ever heard that question? You know, what kind of car, you're a reliability engineer, what kind of car do you drive? You know, that might be a topic for another discussion, Adam, is that how, for different styles of products or different families of products, as to what degree is reliability a factor in making that decision? Or is it more up to the consumer? I mean, there might be 10 different people that place reliability in a different part of the spectrum of importance.
No, that's a great conversation, because when I look at the, you know, all my different customers and seeing for each of them in their industry, the balance, you know, between, well, customers, are they interested in having new features that are unreliable versus, you know, reliability being higher? And it's kind of interesting to see the, you know, the full spectrum of that.
Hmm. Now that, we'll have to come back and talk about that some. We'll add it to the list as we do here. And with that, you know, if you're listening, if you got a thought on this, or if you have one of the CLA 250s, it's working great for you, let us know, or vice versa. You can find us at reliability.fm, and under that, you'll see the variety of shows in the podcast network, and speaking of reliability is there. And you can find comment fields and get in touch with us a number of different ways, and we'd love to hear from you. With that, Adam, I think we'll wrap this one up.
Yep, I'll just be looking for legal letters from Mercedes.
Okay. So he's on the East Coast. Great. Thanks, Adam.
All right. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.